Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wind Up Podcast. I am your host, Mike of MTGA Wines, back in the home office, finally, after a full month of travel around the country. And that is what we're talking about today, but with a twist, because we're going to be talking about the downfall of wineries when it comes to this travel, sales, networking, marketing kind of endeavor. Probably not what you were expecting. Before we get into it, thank you all so much for your patience over the last few weeks. It has been an absolute bear to try and keep up with recording, getting things uploaded on hotel Wi-Fi, getting the sound quality dialed in. Actually, it helped troubleshoot a lot of things. So moving forward, as we're on the road, we should be able to do more shows and not have kind of these every other week kind of postings that we've been doing over the last month. So it was a great learning experience. And for those that have followed along, I really, really appreciate it. Two, please remember to follow us on all of our social networks at MTGA Wines on the Book of Face, Instagram, the social network formerly known as Twitter. There's one more I'm probably forgetting, Instagram, at MTGA Wines on all of those. For those that have had an opportunity to write a quick review or rate the show wherever you're consuming your podcast, thank you so much. Please continue doing so and make sure that you tell your friends to do so as well. It's a great way to get more kind of traction with the algorithms that are out there suggesting podcasts for folks. That is all the business that we have to get through today. And we're going to dive right in fast and furious to this episode because it is something that there's something that happened while I was on the road last week that infuriated me. And I had recorded a show in my hotel room in Kansas City. I was sitting in my hotel off the plaza, had a little bit of time to kill, and I wanted to dive into kind of what these trips and what a month of travel means for a winery. And recording, you know, a nice like half hour, 40 minute episode as we kind of normally do. It was really building upon the question that was asked during our April Q&A episode a couple weeks ago. So you can go back and listen to that about travel and kind of what makes it successful for a winery. So we're gonna touch on that a little bit. But more importantly, we're going to touch on something that absolutely blew my mind in terms of how a winery treated a customer and a client, and a very good one at that. So to give you a little bit of backstory, typically when us wineries go on the road, it means we're out to sell wine. That shouldn't come as a surprise. You know, we're investing money into, you know, plane tickets and rental cars and hotel rooms or shipping wine out, typically as samples. Sometimes people are paying for those samples. Other times we're just giving them away. There's all kinds of things that we do. There's also kind of the charitable aspect, which we'll get into this as well when we travel on the road for a charity event like we did last week for Shuttlecork, helping support the Nelson Atkins Museum in Kansas City. There's all kinds of reasons why we end up on the road. But it all comes down to, are we selling wine? Because that's how we stay in business. That's how we're able to do philanthropic things. If folks are buying wine, it allows us to do the other stuff as well, to help support our club members and bring wine out to them in corners of the country, to help do these philanthropic events, that we need to be selling wine. And I mentioned that a little bit during that April Q&A episode, that there is kind of this bottom line of, hey, if we're spending X, we need to sell X amount of wine to make this trip make sense. For each and every winery, that number is going to vary. I know wineries that are like, hey, if I'm coming on the road and typically, let's say a trip cost you $2,000, $2,500 for a couple of days, you know, hotel room, flights to and from, meals, some of the wine samples that you're providing for folks. Let's say it costs you $2,500. People are going to want, some of these wineries are going to want 5X, 10X that investment to make this trip, quote, seem worthwhile to them. So if you're asking for 10X, it's like, okay, if over the course of this couple of days, I need to sell, you know, $25K worth of wine to really make that trip make sense. I'm not saying that's how we do things, but that's how a lot of wineries do things. Is there some sort of formula that they have that, you know, qualifies a trip as successful versus unsuccessful? There are those of us, and this is more so how we view it, is yes, we need to sell wine. We're not using a multiplier like 10, but we need to sell enough wine to if we don't cover the cost of the trip, that is obviously a failure. You know, we need to at least cover the cost of the trip. And in the last 2 weeks, I can tell you that, you know, we probably spent about $6,000, $7,000 to be on the road between flights, hotels, rental cars, meals, all kinds of things. So if I don't sell that much wine over the course of that 2 weeks, that is a problem, right? Number one, I'm probably pretty terrible at my job. Number two, if it's a losing endeavor, that puts us in a huge hole, especially when you have a year like this where it's really slow out in Napa. There's not as many people visiting. We're not seeing as many people come out and host tastings with us. All of a sudden, these sales on the road are much more important for us. And luckily, we did more than that. We covered the cost of the trip. Like, that was fine. We did all right sales-wise. Maybe we didn't do, and I'll be frank, you know, we had some amazing events all through the Midwest, you know, from Kansas City to St. Louis to Chicago and back again. There are plenty of events. Some of them were interesting, like the St. Louis event was our smallest event over the course of 2 weeks with multiple other wineries. We sold a fair amount of wine, in essence, just a little bit more than what it cost to put that event on. And maybe there are like 50, 60 people there. The next night we went to Chicago, where the cost of putting on that event was a little pricier because it's Chicago. And we sold the same amount of wine as we did in St. Louis. And that event was almost triple the attendance. So you have some of these trips that are like, okay, well, we have a trip that, hey, given the amount of people here, we sold a pretty good amount of wine. And now there's 2.5 times or 3 times the amount of people and we're selling the same amount. Like, that's a little weird. Obviously, that Chicago event was kind of a miss. You know, it was something that didn't quite, you know, hit the mark. And, you know, really, frankly, ate away at how successful this trip was. And this is no hate to y'all out in Chicago. We love you guys. It was a great event. We still had a lot of fun. You know, it's great to see people and keep in touch. But that's the dollars and cents of it. You know, this, I should probably have prefaced this, that I'm probably going to say a lot in this episode. It feels like I'm kind of going after people. I'm not. This is just the result of how some of these events are structured. When you have 170 or so, 180 people in a room versus 50, it's a very different vibe. It's a very different thing. And that is really the main difference between what we did in St. Louis and Chicago. This is not meant to be pointed at any one person in particular. Again, this is where we're a little like cut and dry with the business and the numbers and how successful things actually were. The bonus of going to Chicago, big shout out to Paul and Aaron, was going to, you know, a game at Wrigley. They luckily have been season ticket holders forever, and it was an afternoon game on a Friday, and we're like, shoot, you know what? We're going to stick around and catch a game. So honestly, that made the trip more than worth it, was to hang out with you guys and many others to catch a game and see everybody and whatnot. But that leads right into kind of how we view that trip. So we have a couple of stops that are a little bit lackluster in terms of how much wine we're actually selling. But this is where I take a little bit of a different perspective in terms of what makes a trip successful. Because for some of the folks in the room, you know, there might be people that are like, hey, we need to sell that X amount of wine. And if we don't, then it's not a successful trip. And yeah, maybe we don't sell as much as we wanted to, but sitting there chatting with people, building a relationship that goes kind of beyond what a typical, you know, client relationship is, where I'm just supplying you with something to buy, you know, having, you know, knowing people by name, knowing, you know, what's going on in their lives and keeping in touch and really building a kind of working relationship around our wines and how we do things. That is just as important to me as the wine sales are. So yes, we still need to sell wine to make it be a successful trip. But number two on that list is client relations and it's customer service. And it's making sure that we are keeping you, the consumer, happy with us. That we are, you know, not just hitting you up daily, nightly, you know, for sales and sale. Hey, buy more. Hey, buy more. Hey, buy more. I know plenty of folks that have burned through their mailing list. They've burned through their allocation list trying to sell. And eventually people are like, hey, man, like you've already hit me up 3 times this year to buy a case of wine. We're going to have to take a little bit of a break here because that's a bridge that I don't want to burn with any of you listening to this or anyone in our wine club. You know, it's something where we try to be very flexible and understand that, hey, you know, we can't expect you. I mean, we would love it if you bought multiple cases throughout the course of a year, but maybe just a few bottles is going to do the trick right now because we just had a club shipment go out and you've kind of stocked up on our wines already. That's totally okay too. It's still great to come out and see you guys and continue to build this connection with you all. That was the vibe when we went out to Columbia, Missouri. Big shout out to, oh man, there's so many people to name. I'm going to miss somebody. So I'm just going to say everybody in Columbia, Jim, Lisa, for really helping put together the events and bringing the crew together. You're how I met so many folks out there. But Joe, Sarah, Garrett, Haley, John, I'm forgetting your wife's name because you're out at the Country Club of Missouri. Who else am I missing? I'm missing so many people. Kayla, we're missing Ron. There's a bunch of other people. There's so many other people. I'm so sorry. I know there were a lot of people there over the course of these couple events. It was so good to see you all. Love you so much. That was a couple of nights of one, you know, hanging out with a bunch of current club members, which we love you guys. Can't appreciate the support enough. And the second night, you know, an event where it's kind of folks that we had maybe met in passing before, but a lot of folks that were new to us and introducing us to new people and kind of starting to build these relationships, you know, as, you know, winery and, you know, winemaker and clients. And that kind of stuff is, you know, the sales are, again, very, very important to make sure that we kind of take care of our business and can continue doing events like this. But to get introduced to new people, to come out and say hey to current club members and fans and get to know you a little better, that kind of stuff is amazing as well. And having known many of you for a few years out there now, it's for me a little bit, and as a winery owner, it's a little bit less risky for me to do that trip. There are many events that we do throughout the year where it's like, hey, you've bought wine one time. We don't really know you that well. We're going to have to talk a little bit more dollars and cents when it comes to putting these events together to make sure that it's a win-win for everybody. You know, in this situation, going out to Columbia, it's like, yeah, no, I'll be there. Like, I'm going to be in Missouri anyway for a handful of events and working with our distributor. So let's put something together. I can easily get a rental car and drive a couple hours from Kansas City or an hour and a half from St. Louis or whatever it is to make sure that I can come out and say hey to you all. Like, that's a no-brainer. That's something that actually many wineries do is when they're on the road, they try and kind of chain events together. That way you can spend a week or 5 days out somewhere to help kind of foster this business and these relationships and everything like that. So that's a shoo-in. You know, very typically, if it's someone that's new to our list, kind of new to us, there is kind of a purchase minimum that's expected. And we try and have this conversation with people right out of the gate to say, hey, you know, we don't know you that well. You know, we can't just fly out and provide a bunch of wine and have a party. Like, that's not what we do. Like, we need to be able to sell wine and make sure that the people attending the event know that they need to be buying wine. And we tend to be a little bit more of a push to be like, hey, this is how we stay in business. Like, we can't just do this out of the goodness of our hearts. It costs a lot of money to fly around the country and provide wine to people. You know, this is not something that, you know, that can fall flat for a small brand like us. Because if I spend, you know, going back to a couple weeks of expenses, you know, to put it into perspective, like $6,000 worth of expenses for me is going to be like 4 new barrels that I can't buy if that falls flat. You know what I mean? Because they're about, you know, 1,200, you know, 1,500 a piece. You know, and if I'm just spending, and there's nothing else coming in to mitigate that cost, all of a sudden I can't afford to buy things that make our wines great. So that's the perspective that, you know, we have when we go out on the road, is that it is meant to be a revenue generating thing. you know, knowing that some events are going to go gangbusters, we're going to sell a bunch of wine. Some might be a little bit more mellow, and maybe we don't sell quite as much, but it's worth it because of the networking and maintaining the relationships that we have with some of you guys. That is what is, it's almost equally as important, you know, if not right on the same level, realistically. And this is where things started to take a turn, because I did this, in essence, this same exact introduction to the episode I recorded in my hotel room. And I was running a little bit behind, so I didn't have time to upload it. And thank goodness I didn't, because something happened, and just as a part of a conversation that I was having, just very casually, at this charity auction, a dinner event for the Nelson Atkins in Kansas City. And it was an amazing time. It was so nice. I knew about half the people at the dinner, plus made some new friends while we were out there, which was amazing. It was so lovely to see everybody, and especially for supporting such a great cause. Something that some of you might not know about me is that if I have like a free day in a city, I typically go to a museum. I just walk around, and the Nelson Atkins happens to be one of those that I've walked around. When I was in St. Louis, I didn't quite have the time, but when I was working with our sales rep, Nick, out there, we drove past their, I think it was their natural history or maybe their art museum. I was like, hey, how's that museum? He's like, oh, it's actually pretty good. You'd be surprised. I was like, great, it's on the list, because next time I'm in St. Louis and I have time to kill, guess what I'm doing for half of a day? So it's a great cause, very personally for me to support, because it's something that I'm very passionate about. It's something that I love to go to museums and just like walk around if I have free time. So we're at this dinner, raising funds, and these funds actually go towards keeping the Nelson Atkins just open to the public. You don't have to buy a ticket to walk into the place, which is so cool. So whether it's, you know, student trips or just yourself kind of wandering around, is an amazing thing. And I'm like, hey, as someone who loves to just walk around museums, to be able to walk in and not have to worry about paying a ticket price, like that's amazing. It's amazing to be able to experience something like that. So it is a cause that's near and dear to my own kind of heart and habits and all that good stuff. But I'm sitting there talking to a friend. I've known him for years now, and he's a big wine fan, been out to Napa a few times. And to the point where he's bought a couple of barrels of wine, you know, from various producers. But there's one in particular. It was his first one that he purchased, actually right in our neck of the woods. And he had been a club member of theirs. And for those that don't know, like purchasing a barrel of wine is going to run you, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. And in this particular situation, he was buying Howe Mountain Cabernet, which is definitely an expensive endeavor, depending on how you're going to utilize it or what it's for. And it's an amazing thing. And I've done a few of these myself where we do these kind of custom, you know, individual barrels for people. And typically, I think he had said that he and like four buddies like split it up. So it helps kind of mitigate the cost of it. Plus you each get, you know, in essence, like six cases of wine, basically, that were done in, you know, 750s and some large formats. So it's a great way to like stock up and have kind of like your own like house wine, kind of like some restaurants will buy like their own barrel of like bourbon or something from Buffalo Trace or Woodford, and they'll have like the barrel head hanging in the restaurant. It's kind of that same idea. And it's meant for, you know, personal use. So he's, you know, big supporter of this winery. And he contacts them and he says, hey, you know, we've known each other for a long time. I've obviously purchased a lot of wine. We have this, you know, auction and this event out in Kansas City in support of this museum. We would love it if you would come out and pour during either the grand tasting, maybe host one of the dinners, you know, donate a little bit of your time and a little bit of your wine to come out and support this great cause. And what the winery's response was, I mean, I'm sure he was paraphrasing, but basically it came down to the winery saying, we know everyone we want to know in Kansas City. We're already selling a lot of wine in Kansas City. We don't need to come out and support your charity. We don't need to be out there. There's no reason for us to come out there and do a trip. And I looked at him and I was like, did they really tell that to me? He's like, yeah, they said that they don't want anything to do with this because they already have all the contacts they need out here. They're not in the business. They don't want to do this. You know, it's not that they don't want to support a charity. It's just like, hey, we already are selling a bunch of wine. We know everyone we need to know, and that's the end of it. Like, we don't need to do it. And I was like, so what happened? He's like, well, I canceled my club and I tell this story to everybody I can. And I was like, oh God, that hurts the soul. It's awful. It's just the short-sightedness. And then you're like, come, what? You're telling me that you, someone who has spent a boatload of money with this winery, you ask them like, hey, you mind coming out and slinging a little juice for us? And they tell you to pound sand. You think that's not going to harm your brand image? You don't think that story is not going to be told to all of his friends, to everyone who attends that event? Like, what are we even talking about here? How does that even happen? Where does an owner, a business person, have the nerve to tell a client like that no? You know, if it was some sort of outrageous ask, which, no, having done this auction for, I think this was my 7th year, it's not a big ask. It's a case, maybe a case and a half of wine, depending on how many like events you do. They put you up in a hotel that you don't have to pay for, so it mitigates some of the cost right there. They do a great lunch for us out of Jack Stack Barbecue. Like, there are perks that come along with doing this event. And shoot, we have a bunch of fans, a bunch of club members, a bunch of friends in Kansas City. And the overwhelming majority of them attend this event every year. So it behooves me to go out there and support their community because they're supporting me. It's the very least I can do. And the fact that this winery told this guy to fuck off is insane to me. Absolutely insane to me. And this is where the downfall of us all begins. This is the problem, I think. And the more I thought about it over the last few days, this is the problem with where so many wineries have, or how these wineries have evolved with their travel efforts. You know, this used to be a way almost like distribution where it was like, hey, let's donate some wine to some events. There are folks that are of high net worth attending these charity auctions. It's a great way to get some exposure. It's kind of viewed as a marketing expense. And then more and more wineries started being more involved. We would be a part of the dinners. We'd be part of the galas. We would be a part of the parties. And we would start selling wine at these events and have the ability to like link accounts, you know, restaurant accounts and consumers up with where our wines are available. Or they would come out to the winery and purchase wine from us directly. They would become club members. And it fostered this sales mentality where if we're doing anything on the road, we need to be selling wine. Much like I explained at the beginning. That, hey, it's great that we can support this great cause, but when it comes down to dollars and cents, we need people at these events buying wine. And it has gotten to a point, and there's a very good friend of mine, whom I love dearly, who kind of has this opinion that, you know, if they're not buying X amount of wine, I'm simply not doing the event. And there's an event that my wife did, was a part of, Cote d'Or out in Dallas, that, you know, we had never done before as a brand. We had known a lot of people who have attended and donated wine to it. We had never done so. And, you know, we were excited to do it. This is something that, hey, my grandfather has, Mark, we have a history of heart disease in my family. That's what this event supports, or not supports, but tries to combat, rather. That was a weird way to phrase it, but it tries to combat, you know, heart disease and support heart health. It's something that my grandfather died of. So, hey, that's kind of like important. So let's do it. Let's be a part of this. And his first reaction was, we're not doing that event. It's not worth it. You don't sell nearly enough wine. And we're like, okay, so you're not there to support the charity event. He's like, yeah, well, you need to be able to make it make, you know, financial sense. I'm like, okay, that's fine. But you're telling me that the day you have one bad event, quote unquote bad event, where you don't sell enough wine, you're never going to do it again. He's like, yeah, because it's not worth my time. Very much like this other winery we were talking about. And by the way, this person does not work for this winery that I'm talking about. It's a completely separate business. But it was like very quickly over the last month, 2 months, we've had multiple people kind of tell this story to us within the industry that, hey, you know, if we're not selling X amount of wine, we're not going. And the only thing I see gazing into that misguided opinion of theirs, all I see is a bridge that's on fire. They're literally burning the boats and saying, hey, you know, this is a great event. You know, we'd love to support it, but we can't because we don't sell enough wine when we come out there. And for many dinners and events, and this extends, you know, well past just the charitable efforts. You know, this is dinners and other events around the country. Actually, this event in St. Louis, another individual was like, hey, you never have to go back to St. Louis because you just don't sell enough wine at these events. It's a smaller event. It's not a big enough market just yet. You know, don't worry about going back. And I'm sitting there like, what do you mean? It's not a big, like, what do you, like, we did fine. Like, yeah, maybe we didn't sell as much wine as we wanted to, but it was profitable. We did okay. We have a lot of friends and contacts in St. Louis. Like, I want to go back to St. Louis. And like, well, yeah, that's on you. Like, kind of this laissez-faire, I don't know if it's like this laissez-faire, like, attitude of like, hey, if you're not selling tens of thousands of dollars per event, then what are you even doing on the road? You know, it's just a mentality that it's going to burn a lot of people in the long run. And anyone, and many of you who have been listening to this for a while, you've probably picked up the idea that the wine industry is a small industry. It's a very tight-knit community. It's a very tough business to be in. We don't really do that well in terms of finances. Like, it is a challenge and it is a grind every year. Because every single year, I still have to decide whether I want to quit or not. And I have to sit down with Brittany, and she talks me off the ledge every year because of how tough this industry is. And when you finally get to a point where you feel as though you've made it, you're a little bit more comfortable, are you really going to start burning bridges like that? Are you really going to tell any of your consumers, like, nope, sorry, it's not worth our time? You know, there have been some events that we've turned down, and it's because of the conversation that I mentioned a little earlier, where if it's someone relatively new to our list, they want to host an event, and I kind of set the expectations for them of like, hey, this is what we look for when we go on the road and we do an event in terms of how much wine we kind of want to sell. Here's kind of a ballpark dollar amount. Do you think you have enough friends that you can invite where we could hit that? And there have been folks that are just like, probably not. Like, we would really love you to come out, but we can't necessarily, you know, guarantee anything like that. And I'm like, well, no harm, no foul. Like, I'm not trying to be a dick about it, but before I fly out there, like, here's kind of the expectation that we need to sell some wine. And, you know, there are certain people that are like, oh no, just come out and do a tasting and hopefully it's great exposure. I'm like, exposure doesn't pay my bills. Like, I have to create revenue. This has to be a revenue generator. Like, we're spending just a couple a day trip is going to easily cost us like $1,500, which, you know, might not sound like a lot. That is a rounding error for a lot of companies. But $1,500 to me is a barrel I can't buy if I spend that money, right? That's the perspective that you have to have. But you can't be a dick about it, right? You have to be willing to support a few things and do some people a solid. You know, you have to support the people that are supporting you. Otherwise, you're going to have what once was a brand advocate, like this gentleman at this dinner I was talking about, who's in your club buying tens of thousands of dollars worth of wine, who's now talking shit about you at every chance he gets. It sucks because I know this winery. I know people that work there. They're not that far down the road. And it's like, it just infuriated me, which is why I was so glad, because this the podcast I recorded didn't have this like feisty, you know, segment in it. It was more so just kind of more about the dollars and cents, and we kind of elaborated on, you know, what makes these trips successful. I think anyone who's in business understands this, that it is far cheaper to maintain your current clientele list and retain current clients than it is to go shopping for new ones. The cost of customer acquisition is more expensive than maintaining a current relationship, unless you completely screw the pooch, right, as a business. And I know what my cost of customer acquisition is. I know that. I know it down to the penny. How much money do we spend traveling around the country? How much money do we spend hosting people at the winery? How many new customers did we acquire? How much wine did we sell? How many wine club signups did we get? I have all of those numbers. It's easy enough for me to run a report and say, hey, here's where this was successful. Here's where it was a little lethargic. Let's try and figure this out and massage this so that it can be successful the next time around. Like, what can we do better? And sometimes what you can do better isn't selling another case of wine. It's making sure that the people that are supporting you continue to support you and you continue a relationship. Let me put it into a little bit more perspective for you. We did an episode last year called The Wine Club Lifeblood and why wine clubs are so important to a particular to a wine business. I highly suggest, if you're interested in kind of the ins and outs of wine clubs and what they actually mean financially to a wine business, go check it out. But I'll try and put it into like a little perspective here. The average wine club member in Napa, the average club member stays in that wine club for about 2.5 years. Typically, maybe closer to 2, maybe closer to 3 sometimes, but very typically it's somewhere around 2.5 years. For the sake of argument, let's say it's 2, just to make easier math. I haven't quite finished my coffee this morning, so we're going to do easy math today. Let's say it's 2 years, knowing that there's a little bit of variation there. And now let's say that over the course of that year, a wine club member is going to spend about $1,000 with your business. So if you have a club member in your club for 2 years, that's $2,000 of revenue over the course of that 2 years. All right, cool. Let's say you can beat that average. Let's say you can get to 2.5 years and get, you know, $2,500 from an individual. Let's say you get to 3 years and you're getting 3,000, maybe 4 years, 5 years. Our average is actually closer to a little bit over 4 years. And you know why it's over 4 years? It's not because our wines are necessarily any better than anyone else's. I mean, I very selfishly think they're pretty damn good and a great value, but you still have to convince people of that. It's not because we offer anything, you know, completely like off the wall or different. I mean, we have a unique tasting experience. We get to sit down with myself or my wife, and you get to know the people that are actually behind the brand. That is something that is unique and something that the vast majority of wineries simply don't offer, which frustrates me, but that's a different conversation for a different time. It's the reason I think that we as a brand are able to kind of extend that, you know, that lifespan. For some of you that have been in our club, I know some of you that are listening to this have been club members since the day we met. We're going on that 3-4+ year time frame. And I like to believe it's because, yes, there is a, you know, client business relationship that we have, but it's also because it's a gray area as friends as well. We've gotten to know each other enough. I've been into some of your homes. I've seen you in your own cities. You've come out and hung out with me in Napa more than once or twice. We continue to foster and build great relationships with the people that love our wines. And that's what has made us successful as a wine brand. There's a lot of great wine out there. None of you need to be buying ours. But some of you choose to because you appreciate what we do from a product and quality perspective. You appreciate, you know, knowing Brittany or I and getting to know us better. And we do our best to try and reciprocate that for those of you that have supported us for years. Even those of you that maybe are just getting to know us or have purchased our wine once. And maybe it's just been a bottle. Maybe it was two cases. At a certain point, I want both of those customers to feel as though we're here for you. That we have a great relationship with you. And that we can be kind of your anchor in the wine world out here in Napa. That is what separates the men from the boys when it comes to the wine business, are the relationships. That's what makes wine businesses successful. Because without those relationships, you know, it's going to be just too damn expensive to keep, you know, staying on that hamster wheel, cycling through as many people as you can. There's a great sales guy that I know, separate from the other dude, other people that I've talked about. But this is what he would do. He would change jobs every, you know, 3-4 years because he had, in essence, like a built-in list of clients and friends, like I'm talking about, that he would accumulate over the course of his tenure at a winery. He would sell all them wine, and once that list was tapped out on that particular wine, going would get tough. He would have to work on customer acquisition and building that list. The numbers started to dip because there was no one left to sell wine to on his list. And as soon as it was starting to dip, he would bail, move on to the next brand. He would start relatively slow, have a pretty good year, and then he would hit all that same list over again and be like, hey, I'm somewhere new. These wines are amazing. Let me sell you more wine. It's a great strategy. But it didn't ever do anything for those brands because he kept taking that list with him. And that list was his customers. He didn't do anything to build those brands up. A few of those customers would hang around, of course, and continue buying some of those wines, but they were more locked into him as like the sales guy and like their connection to Napa. It wasn't about the brand. It was about him. Again, that relationship. Now, whether or not you agree with his methods is a different conversation, but he had fostered that and said, hey, if I can keep these folks hanging around, I can sell a bunch of wine to them. Maybe not every year, but every couple of years. And if I have different wines to offer, by the time I, you know, change jobs or move to the next new small producer, I can just hit them up again and be like, hey, I'm somewhere you knew. You need to know about these wines. Let me get you some. And it worked like a charm. The man was masterful at it. Masterful at it. But again, it didn't do anything for those businesses other than, you know, kind of a flash in the pan. Like, hey, here's a bunch of sales. And then it would drop off precipitously. Like it would get rough for a while. You know, I'm trying to think of the right word. It is frustrating to see for me. And I'm also the, you know, the artist here speaking. You know, this is not something that I do. I'm not in the wine business for the money. Let me tell you that. We're not in it for the money. We have to make something to keep the roof over our head, you know, to put food on the table and to be able to travel and see some of you all out and about around the country, you know. But this is not your, like, stop fucking with our program, you know. Stop being snooty. Stop telling great customers of yours that they're not worthy of your that you're not worthy of their support. You know, many of you probably know that we don't really discount our wines. You know, maybe we help out with shipping here and there when we can, but all these things are expensive. These wines are expensive to make. Our goal is to have added value, that you get to know the winemaker, that you get to know the owners, that you get to come to our events around the country. And we try to do our best to reciprocate and support you as much as you support us. There is a balance to be had there. And the fact that so many wineries and so many salespeople are willing to squeeze you and wring you out until you're dry dollars wise, and then just leave you in the dust, blows my mind. And it sucks to see that. Now, the last 15, 20 minutes has been a lot of doom and gloom. I don't think that this is a widespread issue. I hope it's not a widespread issue. I think it certainly has become more of a problem in today's wine world and how many wineries are approaching their travel and sales initiatives. You know, I think this is something that is becoming more prevalent. It's why you don't see the same wineries coming out and doing the same events kind of year in, year out. You know, we try to hit the same city. There are a couple cities that we try and hit every year. There are some that we try and hit every 18 months. There are some we try and hit every 2 years because we know that's kind of, you know, when folks have, you know, consumed most of the wine that we've sold them. It's when it's going to be a great opportunity to come back out and introduce some of you to new wines that you haven't had before. We try to kind of meter things out, you know, in a way that is going to make it successful for us, but also beneficial for you. There's a lot of strategy and thought process that can go into doing these things. And you can do it really well, and you can sell a lot of wine, and you can continue to foster these amazing relationships without telling somebody, hey, sorry, we already know everybody that we need to know in town. We don't need to come back out there. Do you really think, for these, you know, wine businesses, like, do they really think that shoving their consumers into a corner and saying, hey, we've already taken care of you, we're not coming back, we'll see you later, just keep buying our wine anyway, though. Like, are you fucking kidding me? Terrible. I am very hopeful that those situations are the outliers, that the majority of people understand that, hey, this is that relationship business, that you can't just keep milking your consumers for everything they got and then leave them out to dry and not provide any additional value to what they're offering. There's so much good wine out there. So much good wine out there. They don't need to be buying yours. You don't need to be buying mine. But you know what? Hopefully, whether it's us or somebody else, you're finding some great value from not just the wine, but also the people that you know at that winery. And that is what this travel phenomenon and roadshow kind of mentality should be. All right. I think that's enough rambling on this. Oh, I'm fired up. This is as soon as I heard that story at that dinner, I was mad. I was mad. It's frustrating. It's really, really frustrating. And that's not even my business. We're not involved with them. I only know a couple of the guys that work there. You know, I know the person involved, the people involved, and it's like, man, you've got to be kidding me. It's sad because I'm like, this is a wine that's very popular. They sell a lot. They've got a lot of club members. And I'm like, if you're treating, you know, some of your probably best customers this way, how are you treating everybody else? You know, it just sucks. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope it shed a little bit of light into travel, kind of how we do things and some of the challenges that we do face, but hopefully provides, you know, a glimmer of light in terms of what many of us want to do when we hit the road. And that's to make, you know, more friends, to continue building upon these great relationships that we have with some of you out there. And obviously to sell a little bit of wine, because most of our wines aren't available, you know, for a lot of small producers, like, you just don't see these wines out and about. So it's a way for us to, you know, market them and hopefully, you know, have you stock up with some stuff that you're not necessarily going to find everywhere, and may hopefully entice you to come out to Napa sometime and hang out with us so you can really get to know us more. The travel thing is certainly something that has gotten more and more popular, probably since about 2017, 2018. It's not showing any signs of slowing down, but I can pretty much guarantee that there are going to be certain brands that find themselves on their way out because they keep lighting bridges on fire. You know, it's a bummer to see, but such is life. Thank you all so much for tuning in. This has been the Wind Up Podcast. Please be sure again to follow us on our social networks at MTJ Wines, Twitter, Book of Face, Instagram. What's the other one? Twitter, Book of Face, Instagram. There's one more. YouTube. Oh my God, YouTube. You can always find our videos of the podcast on YouTube, as well as tasting notes, seller updates, all kinds of great stuff is actually on our YouTube channel. Highly recommend that. Also, be sure to rate, review wherever you're consuming your podcast. It's a great way to help us out with the algorithm and get this show out and about a little bit more. So I'm going to try to find a topic for next week that's a little less feisty. We're going to try and liven it up a little bit more and hopefully have some fun with it. We'll figure that out. Thank you all so much. Take care. We'll see you next week.